Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John with Dylan Michaels live. Once again, the 810 Hot Box. I don't know why when I'm down here it's 111, but that's fine. I'll deal with it. I've dealt with special circumstances for the last effing 12 hours, so we'll continue to do so. Nate Bucati, not so brash today. Nate Bucati got knocked down a few pegs after predicting Kansas would roll through the Big 12 tournament. Now we'll see if he acts right for once. Jake Gutierrez, who was all over it, he said since he was a dark horse and Kansas shorthanded would have a tough time. Kudos to you, Jake Gutierrez, for keeping your eye on that one. Vegas Jake.
Yeah, right. Hope you listen to me.
Did you bet Kansas straight up?
I did.
I did. At what point did you feel bad about that?
About 8 minutes left in the game, I said.
Hey, because you're a diehard. Because even I'm sure at halftime you think,
they're down. I think double digits at the 8 minute break. I was like, yep, yeah. It's done.
You made a little charge
here and there. Cut it to nine.
Right. At one point, you're probably big. Hey, you know what? You can't have a big comeback unless you're down big.
That's right.
But you did say you would also bet K-State money line. Did you follow through on that?
I did.
That did not look good for a while, but then Texas decided to leave for the SEC at halftime.
they did. Out.
And get there a little early. Get a good parking spot down in the SEC. And so Texas...
headed to Nashville.
Yep, they're gone. They're actually playing in the next round of the SEC tournament. Shocking.
Taking on Georgia, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if anyone was paying attention to that, but my beautiful daughter, Selena, and I were watching the end of the Missouri game, and she said, Dad, they're finally going to win. They're up seven. There's only a few minutes left. And I looked at her. I said, little girl, there's so much about this world you've yet to learn. And then a 12-0 run later, Georgia finishes the game on a 12-0 run in the final 3.5 minutes, and Mizzou lost by 5. So, literally, after she said that, Mizzou did not score again. And then she went to bed with no supper. Oh, boy. Basketball, at times, I believe, is very stupid. But we love it, don't we? Hey, for K-State fans, K-State and Iowa State, it's your tournament now. Take over. Take it over, baby. And, of course, all kidding aside, Nate predicted this Kansas loss. Nate broke an ankle jumping off the bandwagon. He said Kansas would be underdogs to Cincinnati, and they would lose. And so even though you're a Kansas man, you can take solace in the fact that you predicted this to happen. So,
well, it's not always fun to be right.
Right.
I also didn't predict that they would lose by 20.
Were you rooting for Cincy so you could be right?
No.
Not even a little bit?
No. Kinda. I bet you were.
Not because my prediction was more based on the fact that they would be underdogs, not that they would lose. Jake tried to bet me $50 straight up yesterday.
Yeah, you could.
Why didn't you?
Because I don't want to bet against Kansas.
I have the text.
Yeah, I don't want to bet against Kansas.
For people that don't know, this... people ask, well, when they argue, you guys are just playing around, aren't you? This is for the show. No.
No.
No, it's not. No, we're not. And so.
Borderline violence.
The other day, Nate made the point that he thought that Kansas, if Hunter Dickinson and McCullough didn't play, that they could be underdogs to Cincinnati. And Jake said, no way. No way. Get lost.
No!
Not going to happen. And so, of course, Nate pushes back, and they had a debate about it on the air. Jake did not give in. Nate did not give in. Was it the thread with Lebo in it?
I think Lebo's on there. Nate decided.
Okay, I got it.
Screenshot
so,
the.
Yeah. So it,
first thing
so
I did
Wednesday
when I woke
morning,
up yesterday morning was check the line.
Wednesday
I did
morning.
I went to bed and I was like, "Damn it!"
At 4:56 a.m., I get a screenshot from Nate, and he really went in on the graphics and everything. Screenshot. And then he used Microsoft Draw or something to circle the line that says Cincinnati minus 2.5.
Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, Microsoft Paint. And then he put, uh-oh, and this is 4:56 a.m. Then at 5:15 a.m. See, this, I have to deal with this an hour before the show even starts. The show starts an hour before even on the air, people. Jake replies, Vegas got it wrong, overcorrection, open at minus one, $50 straight up, KU wins. And there it was.
He wouldn't take it.
$50 straight up, KU wins, no reply from Nate.
Right.
Could have had some
Nate,
of that cheese.
Nate leaves right. $50 on the table.
I'm not. I don't want to bet against Kansas. That's not money
like,
I want to make.
If they win, then you're like you're happy to pay
right.
that bet.
Nah. I look. I'm not rooting for them to be an underdog. I'm not rooting for them to lose by 20. By the way, Jake, Vegas did get it wrong.
Yeah, I know.
2.5, not nearly enough for Cincinnati, as it turns out.
they did not.
Somebody sent me a graphic yesterday. My buddy Brad Mertel, and he's a television sports producer, so there's no way he would lie about this. That was a tweet from someone. Kansas has not lost back-to-back games by 20 or more for the first time. Do you want to guess the year, Jake?
Nate's blowing up the rest of the segments.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to hijack it. Go ahead.
Well, you did, you jackass.
Jesus. Well, how am I supposed to know you're going to go there?
Because I run the first segment, damn it.
Sorry. I'll stand down.
Yeah. Are you new around here?
Sometimes I feel like it.
Sometimes you act like it. By the way, guys, it was a historical night last night for Mizzou and Kansas.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
How historical was it, Stephen?
Well, let me tell you. As far as Mizzou fans go, Nate, glad you brought this up. Mizzou losing all of their conference games, if you include last night's debacle against Georgia, 0-19 in the SEC. That's the first time that Mizzou goes winless in conference since 1908. 1908.
Man.
And Kansas also made history. Ask me how, Nate.
How did they make history, Stephen?
Kansas loses back-to-back games by 20 or more for the first time since 1919 when they lost 37-15 and 45-25. Who did those two losses come to?
I'm going to guess, just a wild guess, the Missouri Tigers.
Both of them came to the Missouri Tigers. 37-15 on February 1st, or on January 31st, 1919. And then 45-25 on February 1st.
Offensive explosion in that second game,
right.
By the way. 45-25.
Right. That's right. Did you have all that information at your fingertips?
That was the tweet that was sent to me.
Yeah.
I blame Brad Mertel for ruining this first segment.
Now, Brad, you know, how about this, Brad?
You
get
go,
your own
Brad.
Show. How about that?
There you go, Brad.
How about get your own radio show?
Yeah.
and come up with these nuggets.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
The work never ends, Brad.
Poor Brad.
Okay, all your Brads and Chads out there, get your own show.
I watched some of that game last night with a Chad.
Did you?
Yeah.
Boger?
Yes.
Bet he was happy.
Yeah, I bet he was.
A good time.
Bet it wasn't.
Also, you want another one, or did Brad send you any more?
No, I don't have any more nuggets for you.
Okay. Did you realize this is the first time that Kansas will enter the NCAA tournament with 10 losses under Bill Self?
I mean, that tracks. We've been talking about the conference record being by far the worst it's been ever under Bill Self. So I believe it.
So there's why last night was history.
Man. And this team was number one in the country preseason.
That's a nice reminder that ignore preseason polls, everybody.
Oh, wasn't last year North Carolina number one, and they didn't even make the tournament?
Just ignore preseason polls.
Right.
I mean, so it's like, yeah, they had a horrible year, but they're still going to be a fourth seed. Like,
I hate preseason polls, and then it allows teams that don't deserve to be in the top 25 to stay in the top 25 longer just because somebody thought they were going to be good. Same thing goes for football, you know? You got teams that get off to a good start that have to fight their way into the top 25 just because, well, we don't think they're good. We have to prove it. They have to prove it three or four times. So, yeah, preseason polls are poop.
But I will say this. This was a collapse, too, from this team. Like, at the start of conference play, it didn't seem ridiculous that they were preseason number one. They had beaten Kentucky. They had beaten Tennessee. They had beaten UConn.
Right.
They had won at Indiana. So you're thinking, that doesn't seem unreasonable. Then all of a sudden, man, they get into league play. They can't win a road game.
That UCF game was alarming.
That should have been the red flag right there. But you're like, well, they've had bad games on the road every once in a while.
I also think it translates to the health of the team, too. I don't think this happens if McCullough is healthy and not banged. I mean, because about halfway through the conference season, he was not right, even before that.
And he was too important of a part of this team for that to...
On both ends of the ball.
And that's the part where we're not used to seeing. And you want to talk, Stephen, about like the way the game has changed. The Bill Self's always been able to have the depth that if they lose one guy, they got another McDonald's All-American coming in and all that because of a mistake they made in recruiting and also because of the transfer portal. Because remember, who would have been the backup for Hunter Dickinson had he not transferred? A 7-footer who's playing at TCU now, who's a big-time player. And in the past, maybe he sticks around when they bring in Hunter Dickinson, but not now.
Yeah,
so
it's easier for a player if he even if his path to playing time is difficult. I'm not even telling you there's no path to a playing time.
Right.
Even if there's resistance to his path to playing time, a player could just say, well, I'm out of here. Well, good night.
Okay, well,
good night. I'm out. So long.
And I'm going to get paid where I go.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Wherever I go else.
And fine. You know, it's the nature of the beast now. I'm fine with it. But, number one, now there's some players you just can't be tough with.
Okay, well, good night.
Right?
Yep.
You have to treat players differently. They have more options. And it's more difficult to develop guys for 3 or 4 years and have a guy sit on the bench for a year or two, because if they don't want to sit on the bench, they don't have to. And they'll shop themselves on the open market and find some place where they can start right away. Yeah. People have resisted this, but I'm telling you, it's the way basketball is now. It of course it has an effect. And that's not the only reason that Kansas took a step back this year. Injury is the number one reason, but they don't have any depth either, like you said. And also, Houston's the best team in the nation right now. I mean, Kansas could have been at full strength and still not won the conference.
Right. Yeah, what's stunning is not that they didn't win the conference. What's stunning is all the other stuff you pointed out. Worst right. year in Bill Self history.
But, like, Houston came in there and said, Big 12? Oh, you don't think we can compete in the Big 12? And they rolled through the Big 12. I know they lost to Kansas, but still they rolled. I mean, did you guys expect that?
No. No. I if you told me they would win the league, it wouldn't have stunned me, but not like the way they did it.
They kicked this league in the ass.
They did.
You know? So. Very interesting. So now we're left. But you know what? At least for the atmosphere down here, thank goodness for Kansas State and thank goodness for Iowa State. Because things will still be hopping tonight.
Mm-hmm.
After Cincinnati beats Kansas 72-52, K-State comes back and beats Texas and sends them packing 78-74. TCU beats Oklahoma, sends them packing 77-70. And the early game was BYU 87, UCF 73. Now we have these matchups today. 11:30 a.m., hey, it's a battle of two top 25 teams. I don't know that how many fans they'll have here, but it's if you're a college basketball fan, I mean, you got to bet you got two top 25 teams, number 25 Texas Tech and number 20 BYU at 11:30. That's a hell of a basketball game. BYU favored by 2.5. Then at 2 o'clock, TCU against Houston. Houston's favored by 10.5. Houston 28-3, 15-3 in the Big 12. And then the marquee matchup, at least for local fans, Kansas State and Iowa State. Iowa State's a 5.5-point favorite over the Wildcats. That's at 6 o'clock. And then the nightcap. And again, if K-State and Iowa State fans, whoever the wins that game, they choose to stay, there could be a nice crowd. If they choose to party, I don't know how many people will be in there watching Cincinnati and Baylor. I don't know. That Baylor guy, the long mustache, he'll be in there living it up. But that's the 8:30 game, Cincy and Baylor. I will project whoever wins the game between Kansas State and Iowa State will then take over Miller Lite Fan Fest.
Baylor!
And perhaps if you have not-so-good seats for Cincy-Baylor, you might be able to move up a little bit if they let you. I don't know. That sound about right?
Yeah, maybe the winners of the K-State-Iowa State game will want to stay and scout their next opponent.
Yeah, you think so?
Some of them.
You think they want to stay and scout the opponent or walk across the street and do backflips off the stage?
And party with you right. Miller Lite Fan Fest.
And who else?
Belinda Post.
And you. Don't play with me.
I wish you could see the look on Jake's face just now.
Why?
He's very startled by the name I just threw out there.
Yeah. Oh, I thought because what did you tell him you're not coming down here?
No, I didn't tell him. I'll be down there.
Oh, because you won't say your name.
Well, I don't think that's much of a draw.
Well, it is, especially if it's K-State. You know?
Belinda will be there. She is a K-State alum, by the way.
Right. She would. What did she... damn it.
I believe she was a classy cat. Is that what you're...
Dylan, help me when you throw it up in the air and catch it.
Oh, the baton thing.
Yeah, there you go. Come on, Dylan.
A twirler.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get the terminology right.
Right.
Yeah, accuracy on this show is paramount. By me.
That's right. Always.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Buster Olney. He'll be sad also. Vandy forced overtime against Arkansas, but came up short in overtime, so... You know, the dreams of Mizzou and Vanderbilt making a run in the NCAA tournament were dashed. So instead, Buster and I will talk baseball. You know, well, as we wipe tears away from our eyes. Hey, it's March Madness, everybody.
Hey.
Come on down. Hey, I cordially invite your ass to come on down to Miller Lite Fan Fest. Although, even though Paul Quinn College is not competing in the tournament, you can still party like they are. Have you played that since you've been back? I don't think you have. Have you?
The Barry White?
Have we dipped into the Barry White since you've been back?
He's down in Waco, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, Paul Quinn College.
Right. Cordially invite your ass to come on down.
Hi, this is Barry White. Please join me on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, May 8th, 9th, and 10th
for the first session.
I'm cutting a pot, Tony.
Come on, Tony.
Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College cordially invite you to a weekend in Texas on Friday, Saturday, one more time. Saturday and Sunday. Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College cordially invites you to a weekend in Texas on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, May 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Coming up
Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College cordially invites you to a weekend in Waco, Texas, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, May 8th, 9th, and 10th. This gala weekend will include the welcoming of celebrities, reception on Friday, the first, second, and third rounds of tennis tournament. First, second, and third round. Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College cordially invites you to a weekend in Waco, Texas. Welcoming celebrities, some reception on Friday. Let's take it after the 8th, 9th. Hi, this is Barry White, and Paul Quinn College in court cordially. It cordially invites your ass to come on down.
That's what we need. Back into this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A bizarre man talking in my ear. Oh, that was Jake. Stephen St. John with Dylan Michaels. Live in our Sports Radio 810 broadcast booth. Right across from T-Mobile Center at the entrance of the Miller Lite Fan Fest, where I will be all day and all night. Got some good basketball for you if you want to come out and hang out with us. Nate Bucati will be here. You're going to come down here right after the show, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, right after.
No, you sound like you're being a smartass.
Well, maybe
oh,
I am.
Boy, yeah, right after. Are you coming down right after?
I think so. That's the plan, isn't it?
I'm putting you on the spot. Don't
we used to be on the
away.
Spot. We're not on the spot anymore.
Well, we could be. Did Jake catch our fish? There we go.
Yep.
Those are the magic words. Buster, I know
hey,
that
what's going on?
You, like me, probably up most of the night. Upset that our squads couldn't follow through after valiant efforts. Vanderbilt falls short in overtime against Arkansas, and Mizzou blows a 7-point lead with just a couple of minutes left, and they lose to Georgia. So Mizzou, Vanderbilt, their NCAA tournament hopes and dreams have ended. I'm sorry, Buster, and we will commiserate together.
What's this thing of which you speak? Hope for the NCAA tournament? What are you kidding? Come on. Vanderbilt basketball was terrible this year. I gave up hope like months ago.
Hey, they were just, you know, 4 or 5 wins away from doing something special. So,
well,
Buster.
Yeah, and I'm 4 or 5 numbers from winning the lottery.
Are you? Well, good luck. Buster, there's lots to talk about here, including a trade. Dylan Cease gets traded out of the AL Central and goes to the Padres. What did you think of that trade between the White Sox and the Padres?
Yeah, it's classic Padres. A.J. Preller. You know, there have been questions about whether or not this could be his last year with the organization because, you know, they haven't advanced as far in the postseason as maybe some of their fans would like. But there's no question that if you need to get business done, if you need to try to put yourself in a position to win, A.J. Preller is the most aggressive general manager in the sport. And he goes out and gives up four prospects. You know, they're internally, you know, the number five prospect and a group of four. And when you talk to evaluators of the teams, they feel like the return is good for the White Sox. And they go and get the best available pitcher in a trade in Dylan Cease. And now a Padres rotation, which looked like an absolute mess when the offseason started, you know, with not much behind Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove. Now they have Michael King, who finished great for the Yankees last year. They got him in the Juan Soto trade. And now they have Dylan Cease, who has a very high upside, as you guys know from seeing him pitch for the White Sox. I love the fact that the Padres, despite the fact they're in the same division as the Dodgers and, you know, the defending National League champion, the Diamondbacks, they're trying to win. And that's what this sport is supposed to be about. So I love that trade for them.
You know, Buster, speaking of trades and some moves, the Royals have avoided some bad luck this offseason. They made an offer to Lucas Giolito at the beginning of free agency, and he turned him down, goes to Boston, and he gets hurt. The Royals traded Jackson Kowar to the Braves for Kyle Wright, and then Jackson Kowar gets hurt and has to have Tommy John surgery. Now, I could tell you that the Royals, when they were looking to acquire a veteran closer, a veteran reliever, They had some talks with the Brewers and expressed interest in Devin Williams. I don't know how close they got, but that's at least a name that they've had on their radar that they've been interested in, that they've at least pursued somewhat. And now Devin Williams, try to explain this injury to us.
Yeah, he's got stress fractures in his back. He hadn't been comfortable, so he'd gone see some specialists, and this is what has come down. Which means that he's out indefinitely. And this is a guy who is one of the best relievers in baseball. You know, ESPN had their top 100 players released the other day. And, you know, I asked, went around to different camps and asked players to look at the list and see who we had too low on the list, basically to rip apart the list. And so many players locked their eyes on Devin Williams, who was number 99 overall. A lot of players felt like, no, he's better than that. This guy is an impact player. The expectation was with the Brewers, you know, basically seemingly poised to punt on this season. He was going to be the number one trade piece along with Dylan Cease. But now Devin Williams out, you know, at least until June. There may not be time for him to rebuild his trade value. So the way that you just described that with the Royals, you know, getting a little bit lucky, that's exactly right. You know, Devin Williams, you know, no one would have thought that this was, you know, that he was going to have an injury that would cost him a lot of the season. And Lucas Giolito was signed by the Boston Red Sox because of the fact that he was so durable. Because, you know, they felt like, okay, at the very least, we're talking about a guy who can give us 180 innings, and now he's going to miss all this season. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of times, you know, you can evaluate players and hope for the best, but a lot of times it just comes down to luck.
Nate Buchady, you're on with Buster Olney.
All right, Buster. So another thing that's kind of a big storyline in spring right now is some of the players that are still unsigned. I feel like it's a real juxtaposition with what we're seeing in the NFL, too, where, like, as soon as it's possible to start talking to other players, the NFL guys are out there spending money and signing free agents. But we got some big names that are still unsigned, and the season's only a couple of ways in baseball, a couple of weeks away. What do you make of the guys like Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery still unsigned?
It is bleak for those guys. You know, Blake Snell, defending National League Cy Young Award winner. Jordan Montgomery, who led the Rangers staff to the World Series championship last fall, they're sitting out. And who's their agent? Scott Boras, who was also the agent for someone you guys remember well, Kendrick Morales, and, you know, Stephen Drew as well. Those guys in one season wound up waiting and waiting and waiting for contracts to come, and it turned out to be disastrous for them. And I fear now that when, you know, as Blake Snell looks around, he doesn't have a lot out there. I know that they've been talking with the Angels. I think from what I understand, that's where Blake Snell wants to land, and maybe that's where it goes. But, you know, the idea that there's a team out there that's going to jump on them, you know, this way, this late into spring training, I doubt it. Because a lot of these teams at this point are like, you know what, we'll go with what we have, especially in light of the cost for someone like Blake Snell. You know, people have wondered if the Yankees will jump in on a Snell or a Montgomery because of this injury to Gerrit Cole. And keep in mind, the Yankees' payroll is so high that they will be taxed at 110% on every dollar they spend. So if they were to commit a salary, say, of $30 million a year to Blake Snell, that actually would cost them $63 million plus draft pick compensation. So I don't think there's a lot of places for these guys to go to be rescued. And Jordan Montgomery in particular, I'm worried about for his sake, because he was a guy who, he's 30, 31 years old. This is the time to get that big contract, and it's hard to see where that's going to come from.
Well, considering the situation around Gerrit Cole, one would think the Yankees might be looking for another starting pitcher. What is the update on Gerrit Cole and his injury?
Yeah, so when he first went out, you know, sources that I was speaking with were like, felt like, well, it just might be a spring training thing, you know, not that long, probably miss opening day. And then the last 2 days, whatever specific information they got, it's clear it changed their perspective on what might happen. As you guys know, he flew out yesterday to meet with an elbow surgeon, Neil Elitrosh. The Yankees, I'm sure last night, probably got more information on that. I would expect today or tomorrow we're going to learn from the Yankees what the plan is. But we're talking about months instead of weeks. And, you know, we're talking about the guy who's the best starting pitcher in baseball, defending American League Cy Young Award winner. You know, I've been doing this poll of executives in recent weeks, you know, asking them, a bunch of questions. And one of those is, who's the best pitcher in baseball? And it's nearly been unanimous. There's been one vote for Spencer Strider of the Braves. Everybody else is like, their feeling is, of course, it's Gerrit Cole. And think about the context for the Yankees. There's so much pressure on them to win this year after going 82-20 or 82-80 last year. Their worst record is since 1992. Aaron Boone's entering the last year of his contract. They go out and trade for Juan Soto, kind of a win-now move. They were trying to bolster the rotation around Gerrit Cole, and now he's gone. And I'm sure last night, you know, it was a very tough night for the Yankees to know that they're going to be without him for weeks to come.
So will they try to replace him with Snell or Montgomery?
As I mentioned, I think that the cost is so prohibitive with a Snell, you know, with the Montgomery, because of the luxury tax situation. If they sign one of those guys, it's basically double the actual cost of what they pay in the contract. My gut instinct is no. You know, the one X factor in this is the question of whether or not they have insurance on Cole's contract. So let's just play out different scenarios. If he were to miss the whole year, and I don't know exactly what their insurance policy on Cole is, and they do have an insurance policy, if it's 75%, then maybe that helps save them some money. So maybe that makes it easier for Hal Steinbrenner to okay that deal. But I would tell you, at the beginning of this week, the absolute instinct of folks that I spoke with within the industry was, no, the Yankees aren't doing that. You know, maybe these are desperate times, and, you know, they call for desperate measures.
Buster, you mentioned that top 100 list of the best players in baseball at ESPN. And we had fun talking about it yesterday in relation to Bobby Witt Jr. But one name I wanted to ask you about, number 45 on the list, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And he, first of all, just to be number 45 on the list as he comes over from Japan where he won three consecutive MVPs. That's saying something that he's number 45 on the list. But he hasn't had a good spring. Is there any concern about his performance in spring, or they just chalking it up to that spring? Don't worry about it. He'll be fine in the regular season.
For a team that basically their perspective is in the Dodgers win the World Series or it's a bad year, there should be concern. You know, he has an ERA of close to 9. And, you know, at the time he signed, and I think I related this to you guys, it's very interesting because the contract he got from the Dodgers, $325 million, the highest in baseball history for any pitcher. And yet, you know, the feedback I got from a lot of evaluators was not that he was coming over here and going to be Garrett Cole number two. A lot of evaluators were telling me, yeah, he's got some adjustments to make. You know, in his first year of playing Major League Baseball after pitching in Japan. And a couple of people said to me, he's more like a number three type starter, and which really surprised me because, again, you look at the amount of money that he's being paid. So when he popped up at number 45 on the list, which is done by, you know, voting of folks at ESPN, that I thought was really aggressive based on the feedback I was getting from people who've seen him pitch. And that's not to say that he can't develop into a frontline, top-of-the-rotation type guy, but, boy, it has not been good this spring. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how major league hitters adapt to him. He has a really unusual delivery. And, by the way, about that top 100 list and where Bobby Witt stands, it was interesting. I mentioned that I'd gone around to players and asked them to look at our list and basically to critique our list and tell us where we're full of crap. And a number of players mentioned to me as they were going down the list, they looked at Bobby Witt Jr. and felt he was too low. Like,
that's right.
You know, Carlos Correa the other day was like, man, that guy's good. Kyle Farmer of the Twins, he looked at that and said, no, that guy's a great player. They thought he had a chance, you know, based on the feedback, to, you know, potentially be in the conversation of top 10 right now.
Yeah, I think he'll be in the top 10 as long as he stays healthy. I mean, he's 16 with arrow pointing up, but we all agreed that we thought he should be higher. But Mike Trout, number 19, there was a stretch that it would be ridiculous for him to be anything but number one. Did that surprise you at all?
Well, Stephen, you know, it's funny you use the word ridiculous. I showed the list to Matt Olson, the first baseman for the Braves, and that's exactly the word he looked. He was shaking his head like, come on. Mike Trout at number 19. Now, in defense of us, I would say this. He hasn't played that much in recent years. You know, he's had all these injuries, and he's gone to spring training, you know, this year. He's been telling people that he not only wants to get back to playing in games because he's had these you know, series of injuries that are unrelated in recent years, but he wants to get back to being a dominant-type player. And let's face it, if he's healthy, he's going to be that guy. You know, he can, and we saw it even in stretches last year when he was actually healthy, where he was the old Mike Trout. I think that's going to happen again this year.
Nate Bucchetti, final question for Buster Olney.
Any other big surprises on or pushback you got on the top 100 from the players you talked to?
Yeah, Kenley Jansen thought we had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. too low. I don't have the list in front of me, but I think he was number 35, and he said, boy, he stresses me out. That, of course, is the Boston closer. There were players who were very much advocating for Julio Rodriguez of the Mariners to be higher. There are players who, you know, they have a lot of respect for Corbin Carroll, the Diamondbacks, but they felt like it, I think he's number 10 or 11, he was too high. You know, their feeling was, no, he doesn't have enough time in the big leagues. That was the overriding feedback from players, was that we were giving too much credit to guys who didn't have a lot of service time, and we were not giving enough credit to players who'd had a lot of service time. You know, it was Kyle Farmer, I think, and then Matt Olson both looked at the list and saw, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, like in the 40s and 50s, and they were just shaking their head going, really? You know, those guys, you had Paul Goldschmidt, MVP of the National League just, you know, two seasons ago. That definitely was something that, you know, I took back to my editor and said the players are not happy with us about that.
You can check out the list at ESPN.com. Buster Olney, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Always fun.
That's Buster Olney from ESPN. That segment was loaded with information, fellas. You know?
Jam-packed, as always.
Right. You know, much like the players and their opinion of Corbin Carroll, you know, many times over the years, a lot of our listeners have thought Jake Gutierrez is a little bit too high. So I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to allow a segment to go by without, you know, if someone mentions a broken back,
back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
That can't happen. Not on this show.
What's going to happen with him in this Jake Paul thing?
He's going to beat Jake Paul's ass if he signs the contract.
Dude, just don't try to predict anything that Jake Paul is involved in, would you?
Fair.
I've heard they're going to try to get him to wear headgear. And if it's an exhibition,
right?
It'll be fixed. I mean, if allowed. But I mean, Tyson's almost 60 years old.
I mean,
Jesus,
60.
He's like 57 or 50.
I
mean, he's all.
I know. I'm saying he's all. I mean, that's a.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh well, if there's any sports lord above that allowed Mike Tyson to knock him cold, but we'll see.
People will watch. People will most definitely watch.
You'll watch.
Absolutely. I said
this is good. It's going to be, all you have to do is be a Netflix subscriber.
Right.
So it'll be probably the most watched combat sports event ever because of that.
Mm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
You know, it's not a pay-per-view. If you have Netflix, you can watch it. So.
That means I might watch.
Well, yeah, of course you will.
Yeah.
Of course you will.
Be 100 million people watching.
If you don't want to watch it, your son will want to.
Oh, what? Yep.
Okay. He just will. We'll take a break and guess what? Jake will gamble on it, if at all possible. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.